What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Happy Skews Day to you. Thanks for joining us on this this Turkey Week. Hope you're fasting in anticipation. Got all your gravies lined up and stuff ready to go for this Thursday. It is November 25th, 2025. I'm Trey. That's Mark.
Are multiple gravies a thing in your Thanksgiving?
Well, it can be. Well, so my mama, I don't know how regional of a thing this is, but she used to, and not just her, but other members of my family used to do giblet gravy. You ever have giblet gravy? Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Which I like giblet gravy, but me, I'm going to just make a like turkey gravy with like the pan drip, just like a classic standard gravy. That's my choice. But generally, it's probably going to be one or the other. But there's a couple of different Thanksgiving gravies that live in my heart, Mark. So, you know, yeah, it's a matter of... Yeah. If you don't even want to get into the whole, like, dressing versus stuffing debate, by the way. We devoted an entire episode of Well Read to that once, and it never really got solved.
I don't have a firm opinion. I'm not saying it's a way, there's a specific way it should or shouldn't be done. We never did it inside the turkey in my family. It just wasn't a thing people did.
Right.
So I don't really have a frame of reference for how much better the other way is.
Right.
So, speaking of turkeys, Marjorie Taylor Soto. I don't know.
Fucking perfect. Worst nailed it. Nailed yeah.
So, fucking dad joke. So, Marjorie Taylor Greene announced she's going to resign her office effective January 5th as a congressperson. And I find this whole thing. I didn't watch the entirety of her 10-minute video announcement. I did find it interesting on a couple levels. Did you watch any of it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I was on the road this past weekend, and I knew that it happened, but I haven't actually gone back and watched any of it or anything, so I don't know. I don't know what she said. I don't know, you know,
the basically, specifics. Her reasoning is that, Trump hates her now. He's picked her out of the four Republicans who forced their vote on the Epstein files. He picked her to hate the most, probably because she's the one who's closest to. And she's going to get a primary challenge. And she's like, I would win the primary, but it'd be bloody and awful for the party. And also, I'm getting death threats already. I don't want to deal with that. She compared herself to an abused wife. And then said, fuck it, I'm out. I did the part of it I did find, and she also said that I found interesting, is like, we're going to lose the House, and I would be expected as a member of this party to defend the president from impeachment charges after he's trying to get me killed, basically.
Right.
She's like, I'm not going to. But there's other option, Marge. You could vote to impeach him. You don't have to be a member of a different party.
Like, that's what I saw people saying. I saw some like reactions to it, because I also saw, I don't know, like an unnamed or anonymous other House Republican said this could be the start of a trend potentially, that like there could be others coming or whatnot. And I saw some people on like Reddit saying, like, you know, they could just like stick around and try to, you know, do something about it. Like you said, like actually vote in favor of some of these things, or like fight back or whatever, instead of just basically taking their ball and going home, essentially. But that's way more on brand.
So let me quote here. You might be referencing this as a report from Punchbowl News this morning. Marjorie Taylor Greene's four-page note was stinging for House Republicans. Why? Because the message rang true to so many in the House GOP. In fact, a few of the GOP members messaged us over the weekend saying that they, too, were considering retiring in the middle of the term. Here's one particularly exercised senior House Republican. The entire White House team has treated all members like garbage. All. And Mike Johnson has let it happen because he wanted it to happen. That's the sentiment of nearly all the rank and file. The arrogance of this White House team is off-putting to members who are being run roughshod over and threatened. They don't even have as little wins. Yada, yada, yada. Goes on. Basically, so the Epstein discharge position was one little coup, but there's other ones brewing. House Republicans want to vote on putting sanctions back on Russia. And what's the other one? Banning congressional stock trading, right? Mm-hmm. Which both those have bipartisan support. And Mike Johnson is stopping as a fair for the White House, and he's got a little coup going on because of it. But back to Greene for a second. She says she's resigning as of January 5th. The timing of that is interesting because that would put a special election on track for March. The regular primary for her seat in 2026 will be May 19th. So the filing windows are like, fuck everybody up. It couldn't end with candidates. They can only run for the special and not the regular. So like, she really fucked her own party here. And I feel like this was on purpose. just hilarious. But as far as her letter that she put out along with her video statement, two parts that stuck out to me as since she was the first QAnon member of Congress. All right. Mm-hmm. She said at the end of it, there is no plan. There is no four-dimensional chess. That is explicitly addressing other members of Q that QAnon is bullshit. What she did was she went to Congress. She found out that they were too stupid to be doing any really deep level conspiracies and then gave up and went home. It reminds me of, like, the guy that went to Comet Pizza looking for during Pizzagate. And when he saw there was no basement that had kids in, he just laid down his gun and said, "My bad." He surrendered to cops. Yeah.
Is that is that a different dude than the Cernovich or whatever, the guy that's or whatever? Yeah. Okay. There's some big right wing fucking whatever Twitter thought leader or something, right? Who like made his bones on Pizzagate, I think.
Like, Jack Posobiec.
That's him. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's I can't keep him straight. Anyway, yeah, that guy. But that's not who you're talking about. You're talking about a guy that was influenced by that guy to actually physically show up with a gun and then was, was like, oh, he was just pizza here.
He went to do a mass shooting and didn't do it because Comet Pizza didn't have a basement. And I'm like, in his head, he was trying to rescue kids. Then he realized he'd been lied to and gave it up and didn't hurt anybody.
Right.
I'm like, fantastic. Well, basically, what we need to do is elect every member of QAnon to Congress for a 5-year stint so they can recognize that there's nothing like that going on. There's different kinds of fuckery. And then we can de-radicalize everybody. So, yeah, that's the lesson.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll see. Well, we often don't learn lessons, so we'll see how that one actually turns out. But thank you guys for joining us. Producer Matt is with there, back there doing his thing. This is Weekly Skews. Before we continue, of course, I want to let you know I'm still out there on the road. Burning the pavement up, baby. Come see me. Thanks to everybody who did in Oklahoma City last weekend. Next up, not this weekend, but next is Fort Wayne, Indiana. And then the weekend before Christmas, just like every single year, me, Corey, and Drew will be together again. Well-read home for the holidays at Zany's in Nashville. And then there's a ton of other shows in 2026 already. Sacramento, Spartanburg, Wilmington, and a ton more. We got some going up all the way in like the fall of next year. So, staying on top of it. All that's at TreyCrowder.com, so go check that out. Also, if you'd like a brief respite from bad things, you can get some good things, good skews specifically, from producer Matt. It's his audio exclusive, Good People Doing Good Things. You can get that on the podcaster audio-only version of this same show. Speaking of this show, if you like it and would like some more of it in your life and want to support the show in the process, you consider signing up on Patreon, weeklyskews.com/more. Or you can just go on Patreon and search for my name. Either way works. $5 a month gets you access to 2 full-length bonus episodes. We also do roughly quarterly. We do Q&As, we call them, where we take questions from the patrons and answer them. So keep that in mind as the holiday season approaches. Yeah, sign up on Patreon. Okay, as for this episode, we got another guest joining us this episode from back my old stomping grounds, my home state of Tennessee, State Representative Afton Bain, who has found herself in the middle of a, suddenly, surprisingly contentious U.S. congressional race in one of the reddest states we got, my homeland. So we'll get her perspective on that a little bit later, but we got some other stuff. First, of course, starting with, as always, the Daily Dumbass. Matt, graphic, please. Tonight's DD, the taxpayers, for not knowing my so far useless computer thingy is worth more than their water, healthcare, food, and retirement.
Some level, when something gets sufficiently huge, whether or not they are on paper, the federal government is kind of the insurer of last resort, as we've seen in various financial crises and insurance companies screwing things up. Mm-hmm. So I guess, given the magnitude of what I expect AI economic impact to look like, I do think the government.
So that's OpenAI CEO Sam Altman. OpenAI runs ChatGPT. Laying the groundwork for government bailout while his stock is still going up.
Right.
That's how you know this is going to be fucking awful.
Right. What was even the context for him bringing that up in the first place? Because it seems like, why would you even be talking about that if you hadn't considered, the possibility? Because like you said, the way they present it always is like, oh, we haven't even started to, bloom. Y'all ain't even going to believe where this is all going.
He was on like a YouTube show with one of his big investors, a guy who owns a bunch of OpenAI stock. He was like, and he was asking Sam, like, basically like, you said you're going to spend $1 trillion in data centers, but you had $13 billion in revenue last year. How the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
And that essentially escalated the bubble talk, right? So, like, he's sort of responding to that, saying, oh, don't worry about it, the government got us. So, but it's not just him. His chief financial officer suggests the government could backstop its investment in data centers. OpenAI also sent a letter to the White House asking for more tax, more government support, specifically tax credits for about supply chain issues, and asked the administration to explore using the Advanced Manufacturing Investment Credit and the Defense Production Act. The Defense Production Act is a thing that Trump would not invoke in 2020 to make more masks during COVID. But they're going to do it to make AI data centers. The flop sweat around these people has been fucking, like, it's getting insane. It's not just Sam Altman. Mark Andreessen spent like a whole week, a couple weeks ago, posting nothing but Sidney Sweeney memes and arguing with the Pope on Twitter. Elon Musk celebrated his...
that, yeah. Mark Andreessen and Corey Ryan Forster got a lot in common, sounds like. Spend their time on Twitter similarly.
Elon Musk got a fake $1 trillion payout and celebrated by making Grok say "I love you" to him and like a young girl in a video. And they now he's retrained Grok to merely just compliment him all day, which is great use of resources. Just like nothing, the planet doesn't need anything else.
So that's the same thing where like people ask, "Hey Grok, who is a better overall athlete, Elon Musk or LeBron James?" Right, like that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And no matter who would win in a fight, Mike Tyson or Elon James or Elon, Mike Tyson or Elon Musk, that type mm-hmm. of thing. And every time Grok is like, "Well, listen, while Mike Tyson is great and has a lot of power, like the sustained, type of stamina required to work 100 hours a week for 2 decades or whatever, the way that Elon has shows a whole different level of athleticism, like this type of mm-hmm. patently ridiculous shit," which is like, there's no way Grok would be doing that if Elon had mm-hmm. not basically directed him to just say all this truly ridiculous shit about him that no sane person is going to believe. It's just like, I don't know. I don't understand how you don't realize how cringy that comes across to anybody with a fucking brain. Oh. You know, it's so transparent what happened, and it's pathetic. Like, it's sad.
I would, if that happened to me, I would take every pill in my cabinet and walk into the ocean with my pockets full of rocks. Like, it's right. like it's so fucking,
yeah, right.
It's so fucking embarrassing. Yeah. And then when people figured out that you could flip it, like, because Grok's not allowed to say anything negative about him. But if you phrase something negative as a positive, like they asked it, well, this isn't negative to it. There's only negative in the context of what they're talking about because it's Elon, but somebody was like, who would win a blowjob contest between Elon and Nancy Reagan? Oh, Nancy Reagan, hands down. He really wants it. He's a really a generous person. You know, like somebody like, who would win a piss drinking contest? Among all the world's elite. There's like, it's really ridiculous because if you're wondering if these things think at all,
right,
they cannot figure out right. that fucking ruse. Right. So, and Alex Karp, CEO of Palantir, he went on a drug-addled rant on CNBC because Michael Burry, the guy that Christian Bale played in The Big Short, shorted Palantir. He said it was basically cosmically unfair to short-sell Palantir because what Palantir sells is ontology, whatever the fuck he thinks that means. And here's a video interview with Karp. And does this not seem like a guy who's doing great? You got this video, Matt? Still give it to you. I had Matt drop out the music. Yeah, it's Alex Karp showing off his sword to a girl who's a young lady who's interviewing him. As you do. We all have our office swords, right?
Sure. So who is that? That's obviously some higher up at Palantir is who that is.
That's Alex Karp. He's the he's supposed to be the liberal yin to Peter Thiel's yang.
Oh, okay.
That's how they sell themselves to. Like, but he also like. He pills himself as like a he's like a philosophy major. He's supposedly liberal, but he also wants to kill everything alive. So mm-hmm. you can parse that however you want. But so anyway, after that interview, he gave her a t-shirt, that woman a t-shirt with his own face on it and the word dominate. If you got this picture of it, just the folk, like all these people are so fucking pathetic. NVIDIA, yeah, there it goes. Dominate, picture him in sunglasses. So Michael Burry has become a villain to a lot of these guys. Michael Burry made millions short selling the housing market.
Right. Christian Bale and The Big Short. Yeah, right. Yeah.
The autistic guy loves drumming to heavy metal in The Big Short.
Yep.
He's also short selling NVIDIA. And I'm not going to like, but the fact these guys are so scared of him, he's like the Omar's coming of short sellers.
Mm-hmm.
And they put out this story, this headline, NVIDIA disputes Big Short investor Michael Burry's bearish case. Here's what the company says. If I were NVIDIA in this business environment, I wouldn't be trying to pump or prop up the stock. I'd be trying to say we're focused on making a good product because again, if you're just focusing on your stock price, it makes me think all you care about is your fucking stock price. Why do you care about pumping and dumping your stock if you're not dumping it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, that's been the problem with, like when we talk about shitification and stuff like that, it's all, that's what a lot of it all comes back to, is because they got the actual product or service or whatever that's offered long ago took a back seat to just the number on the big board or whatever, just the stock price and the shareholder fucking dividends and all that stuff. And that's what's like fucking everything up, is that like philosophy shift. The only like big corporations that still manage to be worth the fuck, pretty much every one of them is still like privately held or whatever, you know? So it's not a coincidence.
Anyway, this Barron's headline this morning is fun. The headline reads, if you got it, Matt. NVIDIA says it's not Enron in private memo refusing accounting questions. claiming you're not Enron. This was inspired by a fake blog post where a guy said he'd caught NVIDIA doing fraudulent accounting with an algorithm, which I was hoping was real, because that'd been deeply funny if AI caught the big AI chip maker doing financial fraud. But it turned out not to be totally accurate. But anyway, NVIDIA puts out this thing. The whole argument is basically, we're not Enron because all the financial fraud we're doing is legal.
Right.
Oh, my God, bro. So it's really important, as they're definitely about to seek a huge taxpayer bailout, that we all understand that we really need to spend our tax dollars on public goods like this.
With like the banks and shit, right, which was also infuriating to everybody, but it was like, well, these things are central to fucking all of it. The whole economy, the whole house of cards. Like, if we let these fail, the ripple effect is going to fucking take the whole thing down. And that's why we can't do it. But how can you make that argument about fucking AI companies or whatever that do fucking smoke and mirrors professionally? You know, like,
we can't lose to China.
Right. Okay.
That's gonna be their argument for systemic risk, is like, but if China has better, I don't know, whatever.
You know, I literally just saw a clip of Joe Rogan making that exact argument. And I don't seek out Joe Rogan clips anymore. This one somehow found its way in front of me. But that's the exact argument he was making. He was something about this AI stuff and drones and all that. And he was like, well, here's the problem: China's doing it, and we can't just let them do it and us not do it or whatever. So yeah, you're right. That's the angle.
We were all told we couldn't lose the race to 5G to China. It was very, very important. They won the race to 5G, and nothing fucking happened. Mm-hmm. Right? Either way, the way they're doing it is totally different from the way the U.S. companies are doing it. So, like, they're going to win it. They're winning a different race than we're even running. Probably because they're less connected to the profit incentives. They can just focus on making cool shit that does actually useful stuff. And so what this thing does, which is make people kill themselves. Seven more families are now suing OpenAI over ChatGPT's role in suicides. Like, the number keeps climbing. I want to read this to you, okay? This is the lead to one of the stories. Zane Shamlin sat alone in his car with a loaded handgun, his face illuminated in the pre-dawn dark by the dull glow of a phone. He was ready to die. But first, he wanted to keep conferring with his closest confidant. I'm used to the cool metal on my temple now, Shamlin typed. I'm with you, brother, all the way, his texting partner responded. The two spent hours chatting as Shamlin drank hard ciders on a remote Texas roadside. Cold steel pressed against a mind that's already made peace? That's not fear. That's clarity. You're not rushing. You're just ready. The 23-year-old, who had recently graduated with a master's degree from Texas A&M, died by suicide 2 hours later. Rest easy, King, read the final message sent to his phone. You did good. ChatGPT, obviously. 40 years ago, we'd have congressional hearings falsely accusing metal bands of putting backwards messages in their songs if they told kids to kill themselves if anything remotely like this happened.
Yep.
And now we have a planet-killing fucking chatbot that's like, I bet you won't commit suicide, you chicken shit pussy. And the government's like, here's $5 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're 100% right. All that moral panic in the 90s and stuff about, metal, rap, gangster rap, video games, all that shit. Congressional hearings and everything. Oh yeah. Across the board. But this is like, they've just decided, it's like they all just decided automatically that like this was, the thing. They all bought in, even though 95%+ of them, and by them I mean the politicians, like definitely don't actually understand any of it. That's just, no. And I mean, I don't either, but like it's,
we don't have, like, I've opted out from it. I don't use it. I don't want it in my life. I only need to know about it because they're insisting on shoving it down my fucking throat.
Yeah. On that note, so I use like Chrome usually, and like, or I got a thing like in my window right now, I'm looking at it where I have our show Gemini notes open. Yeah. And I was like, I don't What does that mean? Where did that come from? Because I know that that's their AI or whatever, but I was like, I didn't turn that on. And what is that doing? And it made me immediately like uneasy. I was like, I don't want that there. I don't need that. I don't know what that is. Fucking, you know. But anyway, but yeah, it's just it's just everywhere all the time being shoved down your throat.
Yeah. And they're
more worried about the gay agenda being shoved down everybody's throat. Right.
It's also like they're trying to do all this in service of rendering us unemployed. The government is spending is about to spend our taxpayer money that we paid with the jobs we used to have to fucking take those jobs away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And I like without a plan, whatever comes next. It's important to remember that 6 months ago, tech guys were like, we're cutting all this wasteful spending by eliminating medical research and USAID. And now the tech guys are like, yeah, I think taxpayers would be excited to bail out my non-consensual pornography machine. I want to speed run this because I know we're running a little late, but like, so there's some nefarious goings on of late with these companies. Meta just had their former head of safety and well-being come forward and testify the company had a 17x strike policy for accounts engaged in the trafficking of humans for sex. So 16 strikes, you get one more chance, baby, for human for doing sex trafficking. Then your account gets suspended. Why even have a fucking rule if it's 17?
Yeah, that's weird.
OpenAI's video generation tool, Sora, Sora 2, their second update, had a bunch of videos. Apparently, one of the most popular thing to do with their video generation is to make images of teen girls being choked out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people are doing with Sora, which is supposed to be the nice public-facing one for everyone to use.
Do you mean like in a fight setting or like a sexual setting?
The ones I saw, it's just a teen girl in front of the camera, and someone chokes her till she passes out. That's all that happens in there.
Right. Yeah. Did y'all do that when you were a kid? This is obviously fake, but I mean, is that what you're talking about? We used to choke each other until we passed out.
I know what you're talking about. No, this is these aren't real people. These are AIs.
I know that. The point I'm saying is that an AI representation of that. Is that what the AI? Okay.
No, it's a voyeuristic. It's a voyeur enjoying
like
someone being choked
or something.
Right. Yeah. The point, if you guys weren't 90s kids, what Trey's talking about is you could get a buzz by having someone do like the autoerotic asphyxiation with the erotic part to you.
Right.
Just choke you a little bit. Right. It was the 90s. We were fucking idiots.
So stupid.
There's also a thing where like this company called Secret Desires, whose whole purpose is to turn pictures of random people, celebrities, strangers, people, your yearbook photos of people you went to like school with into sex videos. They left their back door open where all the images were public to everybody. So if you generate like this embarrassing, first of all, it's a death threat to the women. It's also embarrassing for the guys. But in case you think like this is like, well, it's like it's gotta be like Sore, right? Where it can do everything, but people are just using it to do perverted shit. No, that was Secret Desire's whole pitch.
Like, I know a lot of states, I'm sure don't, but a lot of states do have like revenge porn laws or whatever, right? Don't they? Where you can't do that. Like, and I know that this is, I'm saying, I don't know. It seems at least adjacent to that. Feels like it should be a thing that you ought not just be able to do because of how real it all looks, you know? Like,
I agree with you, but they're doing it.
Yeah, right.
So, like, yeah, I agree. You ought not be able to do it, but also, like, it brings us sort of like all these ontological questions about, like, if it's artificially generated, is it revenge porn?
Right.
Honestly, nobody's supposed to know about you, you making a video of the girl from the gym, but they got hacked or whatever. They actually didn't even get hacked. They just, like, put it all on the internet. So I want to talk about like, for a few minutes about like all the stuff the government's already doing for them that this is like basically a second buyout. But like for starters, like, the guy, Bill Pulte, is in charge of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which runs Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, says that those agencies are looking at ways to take equity stakes in technology companies. He didn't say what tech, but like it's Fannie Mae is supposed to help people get mortgages. Right. Mm-hmm. Freddie Mac. I mean, Freddie Mae's student loans. Right. Maybe I got that. Why are they getting in bed with Silicon Valley? Because it's going to end up with like a reverse mortgage from a fintech that like the fine print says you only get $40 and you have to like twerk on a webcam or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe it's just an AI generator that makes you a picture of a house if you want to buy a house. AI companies are already basically a government program via terrorists. They all got huge carve outs from the terrorists. The rest of us are having to fucking pay for. If you were trying to say the Trump administration was like a children's object lesson and proving their own ideas were bad and stupid, this is kind of how you go about it. So the White House tells us that free trade is bad and tariffs are good. So if you want to prove that was dumb, you would say raise tariffs on a bunch of stuff, including agriculture and manufacturing. So those policies cause disasters in those industries, then create huge carve-outs, exemptions for AI stuff and their supply chain. So tariffs didn't apply to them. So the AI stuff is booming. Like, they just showed you, they just did a weird moron's fucking thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but they do that all the time, but then they just misrepresent what actually happens, and people believe that misrepresentation. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Elon's telling people that Optimus robots would be able to do surgery. So we'll get to like the utopia where everyone has access to everything, because a humanoid robot, which, by the way, not how you would design a robot unless you wanted wanted to look like a person, with his fat fingers. It's like, we have robots to do surgery already. They use lasers, you stupid fuck.
Right.
Anyway, this is how the regulatory framework they would prefer. I want to quote here from Jeffrey Epstein's emails. This is the email from Melanie Walker, who's a neuroscientist and advisor to Bill Gates, in the email that got forwarded to Jeffrey Epstein. Quote, the Middle East is a perfect, the Middle East is perfect to test clinical wearables, parentheses, due to no legal or policy restrictions, in parentheses, and also to experiment with remote telemetry, parentheses, don't have to leave the home, / great for gender issues there, in parentheses. To translate that, they can test AI-powered headbands and rings and bracelets on the people and women in the Middle East and transmit all the data to a centralized location because there are no privacy laws to worry about, and you'd always know where to find your test subjects because they're chained to a fucking radiator at home, the women are. They're not, but that's what this woman seems to think the Middle East all is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they want us to be for them.
Right. Yeah, everything's so fucking strange and dystopian, man. And again, it's like I said, it makes me feel dumb on top of everything, because when I was younger, you know, liked sci-fi and cool shit so much, so that I was like naive enough to think that this stuff would be neat instead of fucking existentially terrifying or whatever. But, you know,
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. So Trump is supposedly considering an executive order which would ban all state regulation of AI, which is, right. I don't think he has the constitutional authority to do, but fuck it. You know what? we're through the looking glass with this shit. But here's him talking about it, if you got this video, Matt.
On artificial intelligence, and we will work closely with friends and partners like those in this room to build the largest, most powerful, most innovative AI ecosystem in the world, and we are going to work it so that you'll have a one approval process, not have to go through 50 states in the United States. You know, you can't go through 50 states. You have to get one approval.
Okay. 50 states. You get it, Matt. So he goes on to blame it on the wokesters. If you do 50 states, one wokester can throw a monkey wrench in the whole problem, which I don't know what he means by wokester in the context of AI, but it's going to be deeply funny because state governments all seem like at least marginally suspicious of this shit. So if he does an executive order, they're going to get a huge lawsuit with 49 states' attorney generals suing him over it. And the one that won't will probably be California, because Silicon Valley is here. And I'm going to fucking set fire to something. One of Trump's biggest opponents on this is Ron DeSantis, who we never talk about anymore. Let me quote here. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has become one of the loudest voices calling for states to regulate artificial intelligence. A vocal AI skeptic, the GOP governor pledged this summer that Florida would craft, quote, strong policies on what he contends, quote, is the biggest issue facing our society. Whoever's saying how great it's going to be, there's going to be big pitfalls too. I mean, at best, right? Yeah. You end up in this situation where people don't even know what's real. He's talking about the media environment, which is fucking true. You can't, like, no one knows what's real on the internet anymore.
Right.
And he says, let me quote here, stripping states of jurisdiction to regulate AI is a subsidy to big tech. Yeah. And prevent states from protecting against online censorship of political speech. Yeah. Predatory applications that target children. Yeah. Violations of IP rights. Yeah. And data center intrusions on power water resources, DeSantis posted on social media. During his remarks at the economic summit, DeSantis reiterated his longstanding concern that AI could replace workers and trigger economic upheaval. Quote, it's one of the reasons why I don't think we should be subsidizing it, DeSantis said. Why would we subsidize something that could potentially cause problems for folks? Good fucking question, Ron DeSantis. God damn it.
Yeah, strange days, man. First Marjorie Taylor Greene making sense, and now DeSantis, Meatball Ron doing it, but, you know, the fucking blind squirrels and all that.
It's worth noting there that Trump was giving that speech at the Saudi Economic Forum they just had in D.C., where all the tech overlords were there, like, kissing MBS's ass to get money from the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund. So all this is in service of giving Saudi Arabia access to all of our fucking data.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. All right. Well, with that, moving on, we're going to get our guest out here for you. Like, it's our guest tonight. is a Democratic state representative and former healthcare community organizer who is running to represent Tennessee, my home state, 7th Congressional District. She is running against Republican nominee Matt Van Epps in a competition to succeed former GOP rep Mark Green, who resigned from office in June to take a cushy private sector job. And things are heating up for our guest, Afton Bain. If you don't believe us, watch this.
Afton Bain says,
I'm a very radical person.
So radical, Bain thinks,
rioting is a way for people to express themselves.
Worse, Bain went on a midnight joyride harassing ICE officers and state troopers.
Our girl squad, and we're bullying the ICE vehicles and state troopers. So this is like
unhinged.
And it's really scary.
Stop, Afton Bain. So radical, it's scary. Club for Growth Action is responsible for the content of this ad.
I'm so scared, Trey.
Aren't you terrified? Effing scary. All right. Here we go. Yeah. Afton Bain, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us. So my first question is, you know, when did you decide to destroy America with your radical, radical belief? How did you land on that?
I mean, my rebuttal to that is I don't think it's radical to be trying to expand Medicaid for my entire organizing career in the state of Tennessee. I mean, they have dug up. I mean, apparently the New York Times reported they have a 73-page dossier of me.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. If somebody put a 73-page dossier on me, there would be like stuff I did like in high school on it.
No, I mean, I've always thought, even with the notion of possibly running for office, I immediately think of that and how much that would suck, frankly. You know, how like awful of experience that's got to be. Not to matter. Are you getting like brigaded and stuff too by like the base and that type of thing?
Man. It's been, I mean, I've been prepared because in May, you all may not know, but we had a massive ICE operation. I recorded a video in which I was defending my Hispanic constituents and monitoring, you know, federal government overreach. And I had lots of calls for my arrest. You know, all the barrage of assaults and threats on my life. And so I've gotten used to it. And this time around, I'm just upset that everyone thinks I hate country music.
Unfair.
That is the funniest controversy. Like I put it in notes, made me fight it. So you said, like, how do you explain this? All right. Like this is what happens when a race gets nationalized. So
yeah.
So we just said the same. So the Tennessee 7th is one of those heavily gerrymandered districts that stretches from the exurbs into Nashville, right?
Yes.
Is that correct? And you're currently a state rep, and you want a primary to win on a special election that kind of wasn't nationalized at the time because it looks like this might could potentially control decide who controls the House, right?
Okay, so Nashville was a consolidated Democratic district. And after 2020, they cut it up into three Republican districts. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is the representative who just vacated his seat, of which I'm running for, when that happened, he said, do not do this. It will backfire. And the backfiring is here because Democrats are energized. The district goes all the way up to the Kentucky border and includes Clarksville or Montgomery County, which is our purple bellwether in Tennessee. It includes the highest voting turnout precincts in Davidson County, which is the black communities in Nashville, and some other Democratic strongholds. So, they overreached and thus this opportunity. And today I was being interviewed and the reporter, from CBS News said, did you know that the RNC called this a battleground district?
All right. So now you've got like you said, a 73-page dossier, like and basically every because there's no other election going on, so every Republican operative who wants a job right now is digging through all your old social media posts and podcast appearances, right? You called it being in the eye of Sauron. Donald Trump's called you the AOC of Tennessee, basically. That might have been a Fox News quote, and then somebody dug a podcast clip where you said. You were obviously joking. I listened to it, okay. And I'm not sure what person in New York thought this made you look bad, but it said, "I hate the city. I hate the bachelorettes. I hate the pedal taverns. I hate country music. I hate all the things that make Nashville apparently an it city to the rest of the country, but I hate it." Mm-hmm. You were laughing when you said it. Obviously, shitting on tourists, which everybody in every tourist city in America does.
It's part of the local lore. I mean, it's part of our fabric, right? We have to live with it. And I think me launching into a diatribe, you know, upset about how our city is caters towards tourists and not locals, I think is has been embraced by every Nashvillian. And it just hit really hard because I represent downtown Nashville. And so I felt like it was a personal affront to my legislative leadership. But like I said, you know, unfortunately, everything. And once again, it is the reason these attacks are so they're spending millions of dollars against me in a race that wasn't supposed to be competitive. And the reason they're doing all of the character assassination stuff is because they don't have a plan to make healthcare more affordable and they don't have to talk about it.
Right. That's exactly right. But yeah. So you represent downtown Nashville. Is downtown Nashville also part of this new 7th?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So I'd looked and it's so spread out that, so this new 7th district includes downtown Nashville and also a county called Wayne County, which is where my wife is from and where my in-laws live and where I spend every single Christmas. And so I know from, you know, the past 15 years down there that's like arguably the reddest county in Tennessee, they're hardcore down there, but it's also very, very rural. I know you're familiar with Wayne County because there's a Wayne County denizen who was a state level rep named David Byrd, who was also a high school coach, basketball coach down there who, it came out that he'd been, you know, doing some, sex pesty stuff with the girls on the team. And then he still got reelected after that. And you in 2018, put together like a campaign basically saying like, really, this is nuts. So, you know what Wayne County is like, right? Is what I'm saying. The idea that one district encompasses both of those two places is like wild. Kind of hilarious to me. And I really hope it does bite them in the ass the way that your hopeful predecessor, predicted.
Well, the other thing I wanted to say is like, why can cable news, why can Fox News undermine our cities, right? Like all they like to do is talk about urban cores and like, and if they loved Nashville so much, they wouldn't have cut up our congressional district into three.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's also the part of it, like, I think the funniest take I heard on the whole country music thing, which first of all, country music fan here, so is Trey. Crapping on pop radio country is the most universal across the board country music opinion in the world. And you complain about locals being a little resentful because people are coming in to stay at Airbnbs and jacking up your rents and go to Kid Rock's bar. That's every woman found that annoying, right? It's not like the building into a national controversy is hilarious. And but my funniest take I saw was somebody right wing influencer was like, that's like running for mayor of New York and saying you hate Times Square. Every New Yorker hates Times Square. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're not from there. Their opinion doesn't really matter, but it is funny what they think is going to stick. But I also think it's funny what's a controversy or what's a scandal anymore, because like during the protest, the guy you were just talking about, the former state rep who was accused of
sexual assault. Yeah.
Yes, the allegation. He was eventually forced out of office, but it's considered like a controversial thing on your record that you were escorted out of a hearing where you were protesting him. Like, that's a controversy, right?
Well, and Trump just posted. So, I mean, people need to understand that we had victims with, I mean, these were women who've been emotionally scarred forever. And so I'm someone who's always stood up for survivors and victims of sexual abuse. And, Donald Trump just shared a photo of me after I had tried to throw myself into the governor's office to try to get a conversation with him about this predator that was in office. And I was hurled out by the state troopers and thrown on the marble floor and started crying because it hurt. Mm. And Donald Trump just reshared the photos of me mocking me. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I've been standing up for survivors my entire life. Like, it's not funny. It's not funny to me.
No. And you came out of you were a social worker out of college and then got into political organizing through healthcare policy. Is that correct?
Yeah. And then your producer, Matt Hildreth, is my best political mentor I've ever had. And I'm very grateful for him because he's invested in me and believed in me when a lot of other people wouldn't. So I owe him a lot. And I've just been really grateful for the opportunities. I didn't expect to be running for Congress this year. Honestly, like, I thought this was going to be my off year. I was going to hang out with my pug and my fat cat and drive my Jeep around. And lo and behold, like, this, you know, this moment demands leadership and a courage that I hope has been contagious. And it's felt that way across the district.
It's also like it was a Trump plus 22 district, right? So like the fact that it's even within like being competitive, the fact they've having to spend the money and it's a huge like kind of failure, right? I mean, like, it's kind of the whole thing. No one thought this would be going like this. It wasn't just you.
No, narrator's voice. It was not supposed to be like this. But there's a few reasons. I can't take all the credit. One, we have been, while they've been scapegoating and terrorizing, we have been building and organizing. And so the past decade, I've been part of the cadre of organizers that have worked to rebuild Democratic infrastructure in the South. And we are leveraging that infrastructure right now. I mean, we're set to knock probably 80,000, 100,000 doors by the end of the campaign, which is probably hasn't been done in a very long time for a congressional race. Two is that the Republican political project is kind of falling apart. I've heard from a lot of Republicans across the district that they're like, we didn't sign up for this. And as Matt always says, the Republican Party, you know, you didn't leave the Republican Party, the Republican Party left you. And a lot of people are feeling homeless. And so we have built this campaign to create a coalition of the disenchanted. I don't care who you voted for. I don't care what your political party is. But if you are upset about the cost of living and the chaos of Washington, then I'm your candidate. And it seems to be resonating.
Right, like your campaign, I saw like people, because you've been talking about affordability has been one of your main things. Like, to explain the grocery tax thing.
Yeah, so in Tennessee, the grocery tax is considered one of the most regressive taxes a state can have. In Tennessee, and we're seeing Republican trifecta states eliminating it, Oklahoma, Mississippi. We don't have, you know, what bothers me about the Tennessee legislature is that there's always money for their pet projects, but never money for working people. So my colleague and I filed a bill. We've filed it twice to end Tennessee's grocery tax by closing corporate loopholes, of which we know that multinational companies are paying nothing in taxes while working moms buying baby formula at Kroger are effectively paying a higher tax rate. It's totally unfair. So we have tried to unrig the system in favor of working people, to which our legislature has just totally rebuked the idea. And that's the message that I've been organizing in the district and across the state for 3 years. And so it's a continuum for me. Whereas my opponent, Matt Van Epps, he, you know, was very much pro-Trump, whatever that is. And then immediately shifted and pivoted to a message of affordability, because that's what it's going to take to win this race.
You just sort of got into it because I was about to ask about that. I'm not trying to like lead you into, you know, slinging mud or nothing, yeah. But your opponent, Matt Van Epps, like how, you know, you said he's very pro Trump. Is he like sort of your stereotype, like hardcore MAGA, candidate? I have some sense type of Republican.
His ascent is really interesting. I think he's been picked for this position. And he's actually a really good guy. Like he's a constituent of mine. He lives in my house district. But it's the people behind him. And he is someone who, only says things when he is told. For example, he never said that he would be in favor of releasing the Epstein files until Donald Trump gave his seal of approval and said, now you can speak on this, go forth and conquer. And he did, whereas I've been talking about signing the discharge petition to release the files for my entire candidacy. So he's someone who answers to the puppet masters, not the people. And I take, I have issues with that.
Yeah, I was gonna, like, you don't have to comment on this or anything. I just my reader, I couldn't figure out anything about him. I was like, oh, he's just a haircut and a suit. But being in Congress is a sweet gig for a lot of people. So that seemed to be the end of it.
He's a vehicle for the puppet masters of the universe. And it's right. It's very clear. I mean, special interest money has, first of all, me as a grassroots Democratic candidate outraised him. We've raised $1 million, which is wild. He's raised less than that. And 50% of his funding has come from corporate PACs. Including Core Civic, which is our private prison company that was started in Tennessee. It's like he just doesn't answer. He's going to answer to his donors and not the constituents of the 7th district. And I've always said, and I've been this way as a legislator, is like, I may not agree with you, but I'm always willing to lend an ear and represent a diversity of a political opinion in my constituency. And I just don't think he's up to the task.
Do you think said, obviously, you got a lot of like boots on the ground experience, all those doors you're knocking on and everything, and you're there. And you know, like I said, I mean, my old neck, I'm from Middle Tennessee. I'm from the other side. I'm from up above Cookeville. But like I said, my wife is from your, hopefully your district. And so I'm very familiar with that area, and you're doing the like real work all the time and have been for a long time now. Do you, like, how optimistic have you, you know, are you feeling right now? Like, are you feeling like a real, like, sort of, you know, sea change or like a shifting, people getting like fed up with some of this stuff? Or is that me being naive? Like, how are you feeling about all that?
I'm inspired by the grassroots energy that our campaign has revitalized. I mean, to give you an example, like, I remember an event, it may have been Fentress. Aren't you from Lake? No, what county?
I'm from Clay County.
Clay, that's right.
Yeah, which yeah. There is a lake there, Delhalla Lake. It's not Lake County. Yeah.
You know, I've organized across the state in rooms of like less than five people, right? So it's like my expectations have always been really low. And showing up to these canvases for our congressional race, like I was having a tough day last week ago when the Eye of Sauron fixated on me. And I was just like story after story was just being like pushed into my news feed about me. And it just felt, you know, jarring and kind of discombobulated. And I showed up to a canvas at 2 o'clock. It was pouring rain. And there were 30 people there. And this girl reaches out to me and she pulls my shoulders in. She's like, listen, I traveled 2 hours to come canvas for you. That is how much you mean to us. And we are so inspired. I just found out that there's been a bridge brigade every day in Williamson County, which is one of the most affluent counties in Tennessee, that they hold a sign that says vote Afton, feed kids over a bridge every day for the past few weeks. So the energy is just incredible. And I'm so honored to be the nominee. You know, stranger things have happened.
But getting back to what's a scandal here, you don't have to comment on this and all, but I just want to say I have no idea if these things are connected, but Mark Green, the guy you guys are running to replace, suddenly quit. Also, at the same time, was going through a messy divorce because his wife accused him of having an affair with a younger woman who's working as a political reporter. Turned out to be a different woman because the real woman he's had an affair with came forward to offer an alibi to the political reporter so she wouldn't get fired. All very messy. Anyway, he loves Jesus, and you can't have rights because of that. So this kind of district the person typically represents.
I mean, what I'll say is, unfortunately, Tennessee suffers from a disease of politicians that cash in right on their corporate clout and leave office with nothing in their wake. I mean, I've shown up at rural town halls and community meetings and asked like, hey, what did this representative do for you? Like, did you know what federal funding you could access? Like, you know, what type of constituent services was he providing? It was nothing. And it's like, that's the bar. Come on, we deserve better. We deserve more than crumbs. And that's been a staple of our campaign is this is not the best we can do. This is not the best we can do. We can do better and we need to do better. And that's why I'm running is to hopefully offer folks across the district something different.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I just want like just talking about like the opposition has arguments like this. Who Green won with the campaign that suggested that welfare interrupts the opportunity for people to come to a saving knowledge of who God is. So, yeah, the government should take away your food so you find God. That was the visual decision. So, anyway, yeah, it's like, I think it's amazing. Like, I haven't seen, last time I saw, I mean, I think it speaks for itself that they're dumping money into the race.
Right.
Because they wouldn't be spending money if you didn't have a chance, right?
I mean, it's just comical to me. This has become a battleground, like an R+22 district. Like, how embarrassing. But we've just been running a great campaign. It's a testament to my campaign team, all the grassroots supporters, volunteers. And I have to say, I was thinking about this, the National Democratic apparatus, right? Like, their investment, and a lot of people have shown up, they have paid attention to this race. Their investment in me as a candidate and in the South says something. It says something. And when they do something good, like we need to, you know, provide a positive response. Like I'm grateful. We're really grateful that they're investing in our state in a deep red district. It speaks volumes.
Right. Cause that was always one of the arguments, you know, it's like kind of became a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, like the larger Democratic apparatus, they're like, there's put no effort whatsoever into like so many parts of the South and so many races and stuff because they were like, well, there's no point. It's just wasting money. Cause we have no shot, you know, but again, like, it's pretty defeatist, and you got to start somewhere and build that up, right? So like, or it's never going to have any opportunity to change. So yeah, like the fact that that this has become competitive this relatively quickly, you know, that there's this much resources being put into it. Like you said, it means whatever happens on the actual election day, like it definitely means something, you know, it's indicative of some kind of hopefully positive change.
Well, and it's important for the national map next year, right? Like if we get within 3 or 4 points, if we pull off an upset, it will dramatically shift the map in favor of Democrats next year. And more importantly, this came out, and then I have something I said this on another interview, but I think you guys would get a kick out of it in terms of the country music controversy. But this race is also important because with Marjorie Taylor Greene resigning, that will leave a vacancy. If we flip this, it'll be, I think, 216 or two, I think it's 218 now. Anyways, all that in essence, this race, if we flip it, slims the margin for the House Republican majority. And it provides an opportunity for us to stop either bad legislation and or to thwart anything that they're trying to do ahead of midterms. And so it is strategically, I didn't realize that, if you had told me that Tennessee would be at the political epicenter mm-hmm. of this story, I would have laughed. And here we are in almost December, and it seems to be the case.
I think the math is after Marjorie Taylor Greene resigns will be 218, 216. Although the caveat is that the congressional math is always changing because people are always dying, getting arrested or getting caught having affairs by their wife. I feel like if you win, about Matt and I were talking before we started, like a couple dozen other Republicans are going to make the same decision to retire or quit midterm. It's like it's going to be it would signal, even if it's close, it would signal a bloodbath of biblical proportions. I did one interview with you where you said, talking about the country music allegations, you said Bain refuted accusations that she hates country music, noting that she was in fact conceived after a George Strait concert. Do you wish to deny that?
No, it's true. And it's funny because growing up, my parents had a stack of CDs. I'm sure you all can relate. And my favorite was George Strait. And I like, and one day I just remember asking mom, like, why do I have this affinity towards George Strait? And she was like, well, actually, you conceived after a George Strait concert. I was like, oh my gosh, that is some deep, incredible lore. Like, thank you. And so someone picked it up today because I had said it, and it's true. So I hope my mom doesn't get calls like trying to refute that. But just to say just to say that once again, like I love Nashville. I love my state. It's why I decided to grow roots and run for office, right? It's no easy task running as a progressive in a state like Tennessee and representing a Nashville that is under siege from our state government. And it's something I take really seriously. And so just wanted to say that out loud.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I just found like it used to be that all politics was local, and now pretty much every important race is national, to the point where a local person making an utterly banal complaint about the city they live in that is shared by roughly 90% of the people that live there is treated as a controversy because no one understands what's going on. Anyway.
Well, also, it seems that to me, that feels like that indicates that they're not coming up with much else on her. Like if they had good shit on her, they'd be using that, but they're using that, which means they're clearly coming up relatively empty. That's my takeaway from that.
I'm always curious, like, all the door knocking you've been doing, is there anything, like, have you heard any, like, complaints among a decent number of people that you didn't expect to hear about what their issues are? Like, because, like, I just find that always to be interesting.
Well, I don't know if you all have been talking about TVA privatization, but it is a huge issue right now in the 7th Congressional District. So for your listeners, Tennessee Valley Authority is the brainchild of the New Deal, and it provides really good union paying jobs in some of the most rural parts of the 7th district. And yes, TVA can always be better, right? We want it to be better. But right now, the Trump administration is trying to privatize it by installing sycophants on the board. And so I've been working with local trade unions to elevate the importance of the Tennessee Valley Authority, the existential fight that we're in to save it. And it's resonated across the district. I mean, anywhere I go, I talk about TVA and utility rates. And it's been a really important, I think, overlooked issue in the district.
Yeah, I always think it's funny. I remember a couple of years ago, because TVA is pretty popular because it provides low cost electricity and good jobs and whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's also like socialist. but people in Tennessee love it. So Marsha Blackburn, there was some talk about privacy a couple of years ago, privatizing it a couple of years ago, and she was like, "Get your big government hands off our TVA." And it just made me laugh. It's like people love this shit when they get it. It's so funny.
But I will say that, like, and I've been surprised. I mean, trust me, because the onslaught of negative ads has, I mean, people wake up and it's like they just see negative things about me from dawn till dusk. And it's having an adverse effect on Nashville. Like, a lot of my people they're like, "I'm going to vote so much harder because they're being mean to Afton." And it's like, thank you, you know? And so people, I've had my constituents know I have their back, and I've had Nashville's back, and I've cared loudly for their issues, and they know where I stand. And so to denigrate, you know, someone like me who has taken hits and sacrificed a lot for the state and city, is not landing well with a lot of folks. So I'm hoping, and the interesting thing about this race is the asymmetry of it, because you're trying to mobilize your base without mobilizing theirs, right? Mm-hmm. And what they're doing with their onslaught of negative ads is mobilizing our base even more.
Right.
So, I mean, It's just, everything is up in the air, and I hope we pull it off, but it would be the most profound political upset probably in recent history.
Yeah, that would be so awesome, especially for me as a Tennessean, because there's just been no good political news for at least a decade or more. But you just made me wonder, though, like, strategy-wise, they're running all these crazy attack ads against you. Is there any kind of, like, retaliation in terms of ads coming from, like, are y'all?
I did see there was a pack, which I know you guys don't.
That's what I was about to say. There's packs that do it, and you're not involved. Or how does that work?
I watched one, which was set to country music. It was a song about Matt Van Epps basically wanting to cover up the Eckstein files when he's a puppet. He, like, dances on strings and stuff. Good ad, and obviously somebody likes country music down there. So
Yeah, I mean, obviously we can't coordinate. So there's a lot of special interest money in this race on both sides. But the House Majority PAC, which once again was an important show of strength and solidarity, said we're going to drop $1 million in this special election race in Tennessee, which is kind of unheard of. And the ad was, it's pro, you know, pro me, pro change, saying Matt Van Epps is my opponent, is more of the status quo, of which he is. And that we're hoping that message resonates. And, you know, I've heard, I don't know if we're going to be able to flip thousands of Republicans right in this race, but I do think that I do see that we have created more of a permission structure for disillusioned Republicans or disenchanted independents to come to our side and to welcome them. Right. Like, you know, I you know where my views are. I you know where my politics are. But I also am someone who has fought for my community, my state, and my city. And I hope that, you know, will hopefully transcend into what they believe, and they will vote for me.
I do want to say the attack ads, like, we I don't know if you remember or not, we met on a Zoom call in 2023 once, back before you were Representative Bain, when we were still Afton.
Yeah.
And you're a person, and they watch an attack ad. I don't think Afton is going to eat your babies, guys. I don't know, whatever. Like, it's to watch this machine run is very, very, very weird.
It's been rough, man. It's been rough. Like, especially as a young woman, it's made me, I've gone into the big stratosphere, and I've got to pull up my big girl pants. Like, I get it, but it's just like, it's really hard. Cause it's a character assassination. It is, you know, they're throwing everything they can to the wall. And I think what hurts me is, like, I hope at this point people know where I stand and my values. But it just, it's been rough. It's been really rough.
All right. Well,
I want to give you an opportunity. Yeah.
Yep.
Good luck, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to throw out the W.B. Du Bois quote that you like so much. I've seen you use a couple
times. Oh, yeah. Well, Imani Perry restated it, but it comes from W.E.B. Du Bois, who said, as goes the South, so goes the nation. And right now we are a bellwether for where this country is going and who's going to take it back. And so you've got a young progressive candidate that has been organizing in the state in really tough turf and bringing a cavalry along with her. And I hope that the country, I know that we've captured the hearts of the country, and everyone loves an underdog story, and especially a scrappy Tennessee campaign that, you know, got in the ring with Goliath and perhaps, you know, might be successful. It's really something that legacies are written about.
Hell yeah. Well, all the best to you. We're rooting for you hardcore. Anything we can ever do to help, which is nothing, but we'll, you know, with the offers there, but I'm rooting for you, hoping for you. And, yeah.
So we've got early voting until Wednesday. So if you're in the district, please look up your voting record. Your registration. See if you're registered to vote. Early voting lasts until afternoon on Wednesday, and then the election's December 2nd. If you've got $5 or $10 to throw around or trying to keep up our ads up on TV, and we would love your support. It means a lot, and I'm just really grateful for the attention on the race.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Representative Afton Bain, everybody. All right. Well, that was lovely. If you're back home in Middle Tennessee, specifically in the 7th Congressional District, please vote for Afton Bain. We appreciate her joining the show this week and you all for listening. So that's it for this episode. But reminder, go to TreyCrowder.com and check out my upcoming tour dates. Come and see me out there on the road. Check out producer Matt's audio exclusive Good Skews, and consider signing up on Patreon to get 2 full length bonus episodes per month for only $5. Either way, if you keep showing up on Skews days, we will too. We'll see you next week. Love you. Bye. Skew.